Okay, thank you very much. Now, marijuana and driving, as we know, is actually a very hot issue. It was one of the leading concerns that was expressed by our opposition in the Prop 19 campaign. Comes up all the time when you're discussing marijuana legalization. Now, I'm going to try to show you why concerns about an epidemic of casualties from marijuana, from stoned drivers, are highly exaggerated. But I would remind you of what the very first federal drug czar, Harry Anslinger, said, that legalizing marijuana would mean slaughter on the highways. Most of what Mr. Anslinger ever said about marijuana was wrong. I'm going to try to convince you of the same thing, but first, I'm going to have to come up with a disclaimer, especially at this conference. Let me say at the outset, marijuana does have proven adverse effects on driving skills. Studies, and there have been a lot of them, show that marijuana can impair concentration, reaction time, especially complex reaction time where you have decisions to make, peripheral vision, steadiness of speed and distance, decision-making skills, other driving skills in general. And there's a lot of evidence that shows this. The graph here shows results of a meta-analysis that was done by a fellow named Berghaus, who looked at all of the studies that had been done of people on driving skills under the influence of marijuana. Most of these studies were actually driver-simulated studies or laboratory studies, not so much on the road. Lots and lots of studies, 761 studies. The analysis shows that over 50% of those 761 studies showed impairment from THC. Only three studies showed any improvement whatsoever. So those of you out there who insist that marijuana makes you drive more safely, there's not a lot of evidence out there to back you up. There is this graph shows the time the time progression of marijuana impairment. You can't read the scale too easily, but it's a time scale going up to about 2.5 hours there, and the vertical bars are the percentage of subjects who fail a test. And you'll see that at about 20 to 40 minutes, the second set of bars from the left, 70% of the subjects showed, 70% of the tests showed impairment at 20 to 40 minutes. And then that percentage sort of declines. And then after 2.5 hours, and then this is not on the chart there, there are some minor measurable effects that are not of a whole lot of concern. And after 4 hours, nobody can really find anything. But this first 2.5 hours, and especially these 20 to 40 minutes, are a concern. So, with this concern in mind, how are we gonna, measure this? How is law enforcement gonna detect it? Well, of course, a lot of people talk about drug tests. So let us move on and look at the technology there. Now, I don't have to tell this group this, but urine tests, the most popular form of drug testing that we have nothing to do with impairment. The reason being simply that marijuana tests in the urine test positive for days after use. And it's very hard to relate that to any temporary degradation of driving skills. And this shows the results, shows how how users will test positive for marijuana at significant levels in urine for up to 70 days in this particular survey. So really, most safety experts realize this fact that urine analysis is no way to measure impairment, despite the fact that we have Department of Transportation rules that require mandatory drug testing of all our truckers and transportation workers. There's really no evidence to show that the urine tests have anything to do with their present impairment. Less known, and this is something that I always find useful to throw out at my enemies, is that urine tests don't even show when you're very stoned. because your urine doesn't turn positive until a few hours after you actually smoke. So if you're clean and then get plastered, it can still be 2, 4, or 6 hours before any of the metabolite actually gets into your urine. Well, as we said before, the most dangerous time is the first 2 hours. You're not even positive then, which I think this highlights what a wrong-headed technology urine testing is when it comes to detecting impairment. So what do people turn to, and what kind of tests do we have? Well, the standard that everyone looks at now is blood tests, because blood tests actually detect the presence of active THC in your bloodstream. And this tends to be highly responsive to recent use. Now the graph here, the blue line shows the level of THC that appears in your blood after smoking marijuana. There's a time scale there. I guess the whole thing goes out for about for a few hours here, but that peak is very, very brief. It's a few minutes, really. Very sharp peak that declines, and after an hour or two, it goes down to much lower levels. The peak is, in this case, is in these average, this is an average of many subjects, was over 100 nanograms per milliliter. That's high. If you see 100 nanograms per milliliter, chances are the person smoked really recently. But it tails off, and then after a few hours goes down to these minimal levels of between 1 and 3 nanograms per milliliter, and that can persist for many hours, and in fact, in the latest studies, up to 6 days in chronic users, you can see levels from 1 to 3 nanograms residual THC in blood. Now, some states have zero THC in blood standard, but as you could see, that would again be detecting usage, you know, possibly days after it's actually happened. However, if it's above 3 nanograms, there's probably been recent use. Now, there's another hooker in this that makes it more complicated. The red line down there shows what happens if you take an oral dose of marijuana, and that's much different. You do not get a peak at all. You get this low, broad plateau of somewhere from 5 to 10 nanograms. Now that's again above that 2 to 3 that I said is common residually, but it's not that high compared to the peak that you see. So that's, and you can be much more stoned with, you know, showing 5 or 6 nanograms in your blood because you ate a brownie than you might be for having taken a few puffs of a joint and registering at, you know, 100 nanograms, which illustrates my point that blood THC does not track the actual subjective effects of marijuana. Why is this the case? Well, because the effects of marijuana occur on the receptors in your brain. There's no way of measuring the amount of marijuana in your brain receptors. What we're looking at here is marijuana in the THC in the blood. It takes a while to get out of the blood and into your brain. You know, we don't get, I don't think, does anybody get just like an orgasm when they smoke a puff? I mean, that's what this blue peak looks like. That's not the way we normally experience smoking marijuana. So this is only a rough correlation to anything that we actually experience. It's an indicator more of when we took marijuana. And let me go on to, I'm holding it backwards. And I'm not even stoned. God. Okay, now, all right. This is my favorite chart. Let's move away from this theoretical, from the labs and theoretical studies, and look what we actually have from accident data on the road. And this is really, I think, the acid test of all of this stuff. Do we find a lot of accidents caused by marijuana? Well, fortunately, There's a lot of studies been done on this. Here we've got about, I think, 11 studies here covering tens of thousands of subjects. In fact, including every accident that's been recorded in the U.S. over a decade in the federal database have been analyzed. And in these studies, what they do, they look at people who've been in a fatal accident. They look what drugs are in their blood, alcohol, marijuana, other drugs. And then you try to look at which accidents seem like they are caused the fault of the driver and which were just sort of, a bad luck, and try to see whether those accidents where the driver is responsible, you see a higher incidence of drug use than in the other accidents. And doing so, you can calculate this thing called an odds ratio, which is like your increased odds of having an accident under the influence of that drug. Now, the ideal risk ratio, it's color-coded here, is in green, is on the order of 1. 1 is the standard for a drug-free driver. If you get up to risk ratios of 2 or 3, that's elevated. It's considered a moderate level. That's actually the level at which the odds ratio for people who have legal levels of alcohol in their blood, like around 0.05% blood alcohol, have this 2 to 3 risk factor. And the odds ratio of 5 or more in red is high risk, and that's what you see with drunken driving. The last two columns show the odds ratios from these various studies for, first of all, alcohol at levels of 0.08% or above. This is the legal standard for intoxication. High levels of alcohol is the first column. The second is for having THC in the blood. A THC only, not THC and alcohol, because when you combine the two together, you get a high odds ratio. This is separating people who are only using marijuana from and comparing it to those who are under the influence of alcohol, and you will see in the alcohol column lots of red numbers. The odds ratios are on the order of 5 or 6. The THC column, there's an amazing number of results there on the order of 1 or even less. There's a few of the blue results in the moderate zone. There's only one study there that shows elevated, dangerous, high risk associated with THC. That's sort of the third one from the bottom there, the Australian study. And that study was different in that they distinguished drivers by the amount of THC in their blood. And those drivers who had specifically over 5 nanograms in their blood showed a high risk ratio comparable to that of drunken driving. There are other studies that point in the same direction, that when you get above 5 nanograms in the blood, indicating fairly recent use, you have a high probability of a higher risk of accidents. And this is where the proposals, like the one in Colorado, for setting a standard, a per se standard of 5 nanograms per milliliter specifically, come from. It's this kind of evidence. Well, let me just summarize where we are now. In general, urine tests are of no use at all. But when we look at THC in blood, if you just look at THC in blood and I don't tell you how much there is, that's sort of equivalent to a moderate risk, like alcohol after 1 or 2 drinks at legal levels. But if the THC is above 5 nanograms per milliliter, high chance that you're impaired. If it's less than or equal to 2 or 3, however, there's no increased risk, and the data is really good on this. So there's no basis for zero tolerance here. Let me say, though, after having said all this and told you about 5 nanograms, that there are exceptions to that. And there is, in fact, a case report in the literature of a patient with severe ADD who could not drive competently when straight, and then smoked marijuana, tested at 71 nanograms in blood, and drove fine. So it's dangerous pegging people to these numbers. A good ground for skepticism for taking just simple per se standards here. The final thing to note, of course, the combination of THC with alcohol has a high DUI risk. So what does this tell us about legalizing marijuana? What might happen? Well, you know, you could have more accidents because more people are stone drivers and they could be driving with alcohol and that would be bad. Or if marijuana substituted for alcohol, on the other hand, you might have a lower incidence of accidents, in which case it wouldn't, there would be no overall risk at all. So what is actually going on out there? Well, let me give you the scare, our opponent's scare response on this. This is a study that came up in the Prop 19 campaign by a guy named Al Crancer, who purported to show evidence that legalization through Prop 19 could make marijuana overtake alcohol as the major contributing factor in fatal crashes. What this is a graph of the incidence of drivers in fatal accidents in California who had THC in their blood. And you'll notice in the top line, by the way, is alcohol drivers. The green line is marijuana drivers. And you notice for many years, there were only like 2% of all the drivers, fatal drivers, showed marijuana in their blood. And there was a sudden jump in 2004 when it went up to 4%, 4.5%, almost doubled. And it sort of stayed 4.5%, 5% since then. So here is this really sort of alarming jump that happens in 2004. Well, says Mr. Crancer, what happened in 2004? Well, that's when medical marijuana was legalized in California. Well, that's what he said in his study and in his press release. Of course, that's baloney. It was legalized in 1996. What did he mean? Well, I think he was referring to the Marijuana Policy Act that was passed in 2004. It was sort of the groundwork for our current dispensary system. That did pass in 2004. But there was no immediate increase in the availability of medical marijuana there. I mean, everybody's aware of the explosion in use that happened in Los Angeles and other parts of the state, in Southern California. That happened, however, in 2005 and 6. In 2004, there were only 4 small dispensaries in the entirety of Southern California. So it's very hard to see how that is due specifically to increased marijuana use. And in fact, this is only data from California. Crancer told me that it sounds like that evidence from other states shows there's a similar increase going on in other states. So maybe this doesn't have anything to do with medical marijuana at all. Well, here, what actually happened in California during the same time to actual auto fatalities? Well, now there's really good news there. While this increased incidence of marijuana in drivers was noted, the actual fatality rate per million miles traveled in California went down, okay? So what is all the alarm about? Is California really an unsafe place? Well, no. In fact, here is a ranking of all of the states according to traffic safety. Lower you are on this, the safer your roads are. This is accident rate per 100 million miles driven. As you can see in the right column, California is safer than average. It's 37th in the country. One of the safer states to drive in. Thank you, California Highway Patrol. In fact, if you look up seven notches from California, Colorado is 30th. Hey. The roads are safer here than an average, too. Now, I've indicated medical marijuana states in green and states that have decrim laws in blue. And you'll notice that there's a lot of green and blue states here in the safer half on the right. One major exception, of course, Montana. Do we have Montana's number one? Do we have any Montanans here? Yes. Well, let me say, this has nothing to do with marijuana. This is an old story about Montana is notorious for having the unsafest roads in the country. They were the last state to even adopt a speed limit. There weren't even very many medical marijuana dispensaries in Montana when this was taken in 2008. So on the whole, though, it looks really good for states that have liberal marijuana laws. And let me finally ask the big question, well, what happens if we legalize marijuana entirely? Surely that's a different scenario. That could really lead to dire results. Well, what could happen? Well, the best estimate of what happens if we legalize marijuana, the worst case from the RAND study of Proposition 19 was, oh, legalizing California could lead to a doubling in marijuana use, a doubling. Well, you know, we've been there before. In 1979 and 1980, the nation had the highest rate of marijuana use that we've ever had, and it was about double what it is now. So we've actually been to this place where everybody's afraid that we might go if we legalize marijuana. And what do the data show for that period? Well, here is the U.S. auto fatality rate, the entire United States, during the period when marijuana became popular and was legalized, and was not legalized, was introduced to tens of millions of Americans in the late 1960s and the 1970s. During that period, while marijuana use was soaring, as you can see, the accident rate in the United States was declining, and it will continue to decline, I predict, if marijuana is legalized. Marijuana has no perceptible effect on overall traffic safety. Thank you.